You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. John Diard, and welcome to the Life Spa podcast, where we prove the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with modern science. And today we have a special guest, Scott Chavary. He is the founder and CEO of MitaRedLight.com. He's the founder of a red and infrared light company. It's been long overdue to have a discussion with an expert in the field of red and infrared light. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. I'm super excited about this conversation.
Awesome. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah. So I think the best way to start would be to, like, you know, people have heard red and infrared light and blue light is bad and red light is good. And a lot of folks get that part. But from, like, from the point of view of, like, what is this visual light spectrum? What's the infrared light spectrum? What's ultralight? Can you give us a sense of the whole electromagnetic frequency field and kind of set us up or where we are on the level of all the electromagnetic frequencies in terms of red and infrared light?
Sure, sure. So I think that, well, first of all, I think this topic is very in line with, you know, ancient wisdom and modern science, because that's exactly what we do. You know, really red and infrared light, we're just talking about a certain part of the solar spectrum, right? So, and obviously the sun is very important for human health and for life on Earth. And so if you think about the solar spectrum, generally we break it up into three main components. There's ultraviolet, and that's about 9% of the solar spectrum. The energy from the sun is ultraviolet. Then there's visible light, so the part that we can see. And then if you remember high school physics, that's Roy G. Biv, or going from violet, it would actually be violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange, red. And then, and that's, again, the light we can see is about 39% of the solar spectrum. And then we get to infrared. And so infrared is composed of near, mid, and far. And that's actually 54% of the light we get from the sun is actually in the infrared spectrum, which again is invisible, longer wavelength, lower energy light. So ultraviolet light is shorter wavelength, higher energy. And then infrared is longer wavelength, lower energy. So generally speaking, safer.
Right. So I heard this rule of thumb, and I want to see if you could, you know, validate that for me, that in the morning when the sun is low in the sky, the UV radiation, because it's a higher frequency wavelength, gets blocked by the atmosphere.
That's
and
correct.
You have pretty much exclusive red and infrared light at that time. And as long as the shadow, this is the part I want you to comment on, as long as the shadow that the sun makes on you is longer than you are tall, then you're looking at mostly red and infrared light. But as soon as that sun goes to the middle of the sky and the shadow gets shorter than you are tall, you're getting more of that UV radiation.
Yeah, that's correct. And I love that. Again, just in tune with, you know, this ancient wisdom. I mean, some of these old rules of thumb, you know, we should dust them off and bring them back, because totally agree. There used to be a rule of thumb that you should be outside when your shadow is longer than you. And the reason that people would say that is exactly what you said. The higher energy UV light gets blocked by the particulate in the atmosphere, and very little gets to you except when it's essentially more or less above you, or when, you know, generally between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. At that point, your shadow is shorter and you are exposed to, quote unquote, more dangerous UV rays. Now, again, I would argue that we shouldn't forget ancient wisdom and that some of those UV rays are very important, and we want moderate exposure to those for various reasons. But generally speaking, you'd want to spend the majority of your time outside when your shadow is longer than you.
Right. No, exactly. In fact, I think it was 1903 that UVA radiation, the one we paint sunscreen on to protect, won the Nobel Prize in like 1903 for curing certain skin cancers and autoimmune concerns. And that's why in the hospitals in the old days, they would roll them out onto the porch and they have all the people. We all seen pictures of the people with the beds on the porch, right? That was because that ray, which we can't, you know, stand any longer, won the Nobel Prize. And it was an interesting study that was done with the Hadza tribe, the Tsimshian tribe, and the Hans Bushmen. And they put like light meters on them and they watched them throughout the day. And they found that they got almost all of their sunlight from sunrise till around noon. And then in the afternoon, when the UV radiation got really strong, they were not to be found. They were, I mean, they were under in a cave under a tree. I don't know where they were, but they weren't getting it. So they knew that you needed some of that up till about noon. But after that, it was like enough is enough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just makes sense too. You know, if like our answer, I think part of the reason why red and near infrared light has become more and more in the zeitgeist and people are learning more and more about it really just comes back to the fact that we're not living like our ancestors did. And, you know, our ancestors were outside pretty much most, at least all morning, like you said. So from sunrise, at least till noon. And then it would make sense that, you know, it's very hot. You're getting punished by the sun, and probably a good time to take a break, you know, rest in the shade. And then maybe late afternoon when it's not as, you know, as hot out, then you would go back to work. And then, you know, finish the day, whatever it was you were doing, hunting and gathering or farming would generally be the three things that we'd be doing. And so all of that makes sense. And so, but I think what the reason why it's more and more in the zeitgeist is that our modern lives are completely different from how the Hadza tribe are living. And we're spending, according to an EPA study done 20 years ago, 93% of our time indoors. And so, and that was 20 years ago, so I'm sure it's gotten worse. And so we're not getting anywhere near the amount of sunlight that our ancestors got. And so we're massively deficient in these beneficial wavelengths of light, red and near infrared in particular.
And now that we've gotten rid of the incandescent lights, which actually did deliver some infrared light in our homes for years.
That's right.
Now that we're 90% of our time are inside with these LED lights, which are basically just blue light. It has really become an issue, a red and infrared light deficiency, right?
Yeah, totally agree. And a lot of people don't what you just said, they're not even aware of that. But that's, you know, at least, you know, industrial evolution, we moved more indoors, but then we did have incandescent bulbs in the 50s. We had incandescent bulbs, but you can see, you know, our lifestyles were moving further and further indoors. And then in the 90s, LEDs and fluorescents came about, and now they've essentially, you know, in the name of energy efficiency, they've done away with incandescence, and now LEDs are the primary source of indoor lighting, which is super energy efficient. But we've forgotten about biology, and the typical LED light that's used for ambient lighting is generally blue and a little bit of green light, essentially, and there's very little red, and there's no infrared. So you're right, at least an incandescent, which essentially creates light the same way that as the sun through what's called black body radiation, it did have a full spectrum. You did have red light, and you actually did have some infrared. And so if you were sitting at your desk with the desk lamp, you were at least still getting some, even though you were indoors. But now we've completely stripped it out. So the deficiency has gotten worse over the past 20 years.
So that, you know, really makes the case for, you know, why we really need to have some supplemental red and infrared light in our life, right? I know that, you
yes.
know, some of the research that I've done, because I just love circadian rhythms, which how the kind of the exclusive red and infrared light you get in the morning hours, it actually actually penetrates deeply into the tissues and prepares the tissue to be potentially damaged by the UV radiation.
Yes.
And in the afternoon when the sun's down, right, the sun, the reoccurrence of the red and infrared light, or the predominance of that comes in the sunset, actually does the healing for any potential damage you might have got from that UV radiation. So tell me how red and infrared light, and we're going to get into all the healing stuff it does, which is mind-boggling, but, you know, tell me how it works. Like, why is that light healthy and healing for our body, and tell us some of the things it does.
Right. Well, first of all, you're much more knowledgeable than the average bear, so I'm going to give you credit already, because you're absolutely right. Like, the, you know, there's this the idea that the red and near infrared light early morning preconditions the skin so that it's prepared for the high energy light at midday, but then also helps with the repair from the damage of the high energy light that you receive during the day is absolutely spot on. And they actually, one of my favorite studies, it was a preprint. I don't know that it was ever fully published. It was a preprint study And what they did was they shined different wavelengths of light on a guy's arm. And, you know, they started with blue light, like all through the visible spectrum and up to infrared. And then, so they preconditioned his arm with different wavelengths of light. And then they hit his arm with ultraviolet, trying to burn it. And I love this study because you can see as they go up his arm and they get to red, and his arm burned, like where he got preconditioned with blue and green and yellow. But when he got to red, less sunburn. When he got to infrared, even less sunburn. And what? And they actually, the scientists described it, the infrared part, as SPF 15. So what basically they're saying, this is
really,
this is natural sunscreen, if you will, natural sun protection, preconditioning the skin with infrared light before exposing it to ultraviolet light. And so, but that, and of course, you know, if you really just think about it, I mean, that's how nature has designed, we've evolved to be exposed early morning to only red and infrared predominantly. And so why, and so what's the mechanism, which I think is kind of the question you're asking. And so there's two things that happen primarily, two main mechanisms of action. So one is just the increase in mitochondrial energy production. So we know that, so there's a chromophore, which is just a fancy word for a light absorbing molecule in the body called cytochrome C oxidase. And cytochrome C oxidase is bouncing around in the mitochondria, and it can either bind with nitric oxide or it can bind with oxygen. And it needs to bind with oxygen to finish at the fourth phase of cellular respiration to finish making ATP or cellular energy. So what we think happens, this is kind of the prevailing theory, which based on the evidence we have, is that when in red and infrared light absorb deep into the tissues and act on the mitochondria, that they literally vibrate cytochrome C and nitric oxide apart. So you've got cytochrome C oxidase and nitric oxide bound together. Red and infrared light hit it, breaks it apart. Now you've got more free-floating cytochrome C that's available to bind with oxygen to make ATP. And so that's the prevailing theory. And the reason why we think that that's what the way it works is that when we observe an increase in ATP, and we also observe an increase in nitric oxide when we expose the cells to these wavelengths of light. So that increase in ATP, that's the primary mechanism of action. That's the first thing you'll read if you go on Wikipedia or if you ask ChatGPT about how it works. But then how does that translate into like this, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, or protective effect that we see when we're talking about like the sunlight, for example? So what happens is that we get this transient increase in, we get this increase in ATP, but you get a transient increase in oxidative stress. Like nitric oxide in particular is actually a pro-oxidant, right? It's an oxidative stressor. So the transient increase in oxidative stress causes through retrograde signaling, essentially the mitochondria signal back to the nucleus of the cell to upregulate kind of the body's own anti-inflammatory and antioxidant pathways. And one of the primary ones we think is melatonin, that increases melatonin production. And so you get this, you do get a transient increase in oxidative stress, but if the dose is proper, it's a net benefit because you get an upregulation in the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory pathways in the body. And that's why we see, and primarily melatonin, and that's why we see, that's the protective effect to the skin, an example. It's just you've got more of your own endogenous antioxidants there to protect your body.
I love that. I love that you, I know a little bit about Russ Ryder's work, who did the research on melatonin.
Yes.
And how,
yeah.
And tell me if I'm wrong about this. Is it the cytochrome C oxidase enzyme that actually converts, right, the infrared light into supporting mitochondrial energy? But isn't it that same enzyme that converts that infrared light into melatonin, and melatonin within the cell is the number one antioxidant to swab up, like you said, the free radical damage from energy production, some of which is nitric oxide. And then that melatonin inside our cell is 90% of the melatonin in our body, and only 10% has to do with our whole sleep thing. And that's
yes.
The whole cool thing about that is like, you start thinking about like how the sun actually makes melatonin for us. Is that accurate? Did I get that right?
Yes, you did actually. And again, kudos to you because not a lot of people know about that. And so that's a there's a 2019 paper which I like to reference, which is Russell Ryder and Scott Zimmerman, and they talk all about this. And yes, I think I you know I hear 90 or 95%, but you know what, tomato tomato, right? Like the vast majority of the melatonin made inside your cells, not actually. You know, the whole melatonin story, at least for me, for the longest time, was just the dim light onset melatonin and, you know, from the pineal gland and, you know, for in sleep inducement. But that's really, you know, that's really just a very small part of the melatonin story. And really, the big part of the story is that when our bodies are exposed to infrared radiation, as our ancestors would have been exposed to all day long, you're building this massive reservoir of melatonin during the day from that exposure. And then, you know, and then so the idea is that you build this massive reservoir of melatonin during the day, and then you and so that when the sun sets, you do have this dim light onset melatonin, but you know that gets spared because you know it doesn't have to travel around the body putting out fires because you've built this massive reservoir during the day if you're getting a fair amount of infrared radiation exposure. But if you're not, then you know I think your sleep suffers.
So this that why that this is so cool. This because that explains why there's so many studies. So if you get out in the morning and get that infrared light in the morning, it actually supports better sleep. It shows that it actually produces more melatonin. And what's another interesting thing, I'm sort of a science nerd about this, but I kind of love bouncing this off of you, is that there are studies that show, like in traditional medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, they would say that you need energy to go to sleep. And a lot of people who can't go to sleep are exhausted. They don't have the natural energy, ATP energy, that would sedate their own cell to go to sleep. And ATP is adenosine triphosphate, right? So adenosine, as you I'm sure know, is a sedative. So the body, there's studies that show that there's a surge of ATP right before you go to sleep. And that breaks up into three phosphates and adenosine, and that's the sedative that get you to go to sleep. But if you don't have that ATP because you're exhausted, or you didn't get enough sunlight in the morning to build that ATP, which we know for a fact that's exactly what infrared light does, then you're wondering why I can't go to sleep at night or why I can't stay asleep at night, right? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. But and it's somewhat counterintuitive, but it also makes a lot of sense if you really think about it. And so, and on the sleep, I mean, there are studies. One of my favorite is it was a group of elite Chinese female basketball players. I remember it because it's just an interesting group that they did. And what they did is they did 30 minutes of red light exposure early evening, full body, and they were doing it for they were athletes, so they were doing it to kind of see how it helped with recovery. But they also did subjective sleep quality questionnaires, and what they noticed is that the first of all, recovery improved, but sleep quality, subjective sleep quality, went way up. But they also measured serum melatonin the next day, and that went up 67%.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, and so and that's from a 30 minutes of I think 660 nanometer red light full body session. But yeah, I mean that again, it's proving out Ryder and Zimmerman's point, right? That like you get this. I mean, in 67% is incredible, right? So, anyways, and then obviously we've also experienced that. I know personally we've all anecdotally experienced that when I go out and spend time outside, I always sleep better. If I spend a couple hours outside, whether it's at the beach or if I go for a hike or something, I noted my sleep is always noticeably better.
You know, I had no idea that the morning light, I knew that it somehow helped you sleep at night, and I always thought it was the ATP production. But I kind of thought that sunlight increase of melatonin was basically locked in the cell, and that didn't have anything to do with the production of the exogenous melatonin that we produce to go to sleep at night. But I guess what I hear you saying is that morning sunlight, like you said, creates a reservoir of melatonin that could be supported on both counts. So the stuff inside the cell to swab up the free radical damage from energy production, and our exogenous melatonin, which actually gets us to sleep and regulates our. This is the key point, is like making sure that our biological clocks are in sync with nature's circadian rhythms. And that's melatonin's job, really, fundamentally, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can, and so I guess kind of tying a bow on it with respect to modern science. So, you know, So people might hear this and they might say, well, you know, I can't go outside all day. I have a job. I got to sit at the desk. But this comes back to the point, well, okay, there are certain things you can build into your routine to, and certain devices. You know, this is why we have a business. You know, we have very high quality red and near infrared light devices where you can take 10 minutes and at least supplement. But I would say, in addition to that, I do think the point you're making, get out and get first light as a way of kind of rebooting your circadian rhythm, you know, and trying to get outside as much as you can, but certainly early morning. And then also as part of that, avoiding the bright light, particularly blue light after sunset. And now you're building a routine where you can use some of modern science and trying to tie back to the ancient wisdom to try to just have a better, healthier lifestyle.
I mean, it's tricky in the wintertime, you know, like this morning, it's snowing out here. It just dusted. And I was out there in my underwear, brooming all the walkways and everything to get that infrared light, right? But not everybody's going to go out there and, you know, in the freezing cold. And, you know, it's not, no one wants, it's people don't want to go outside in the morning in the wintertime. So I think having a red light in your house where you can go in there and like I have it in front of one of my like a little cross country machine. I have it hanging on there. So I get in there, I do a little cross country workout with the light shining on me, and that's how I get my morning red light. I'd love to tell me a little bit more about some of your devices, the Mito red light therapy that you have. Tell me what makes them different. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. So we've been in business for, gosh, over 6 years now. It's crazy. And our core competency is panels. So red light therapy panels. I mean, that's how, and that's the bulk of our business. And primarily because, in my opinion, they're the best form factor for ease of use, the power and intensity of the light, durability. So if you're only going to buy one thing, I would suggest getting a red light therapy panel from a reputable company. And you know, and again, and part of two things you really want to look for: do they use focusing lenses to focus the light, and do they use active cooling? And if that's a well-built panel, should have good focusing lenses and active cooling, because you do want to cool those LEDs. There's very minimal heat generated from them. I mean, they're super efficient, but you do want to cool them so they last pretty much forever, properly cared for. And so we've got all different panel series, primarily because we're trying to give people options. So, you know, we have a desktop light that's a very powerful light that's only 249. That's our kind of original series, the Mito Min 2.0 is kind of the name of the product. Really good for the face and neck. So a lot of people use red light for skin health. So it's you just put it on the desktop, you just shine it on your face for 10 minutes and rejuvenate your skin. But then we also have everything all the way up to a giant full body panel, which is 6.5 feet tall, 2 feet wide. It literally sits on the floor. You bolt it to the wall at the top so it doesn't tip over, and you're just illuminating your body head to toe. And that light, I think, is 5,000. So anywhere from
Oh.
$250 up to 5,000, but everything in between too. So we've got all different shapes and sizes of the panels.
What about the one that I think most people would like? There's the one you have called the Mito Pro Plus, which is like 369. Do you have one of those? Can you show one of those? Do you have one? Or can you show us what one of the panels look like?
I know I've got my background blurred, but this is I don't know how well that comes up, but this is
Okay,
kind of what it
maybe
looks
take
like.
your maybe deep deblur your background. It's fine. We can look at your ugly desk. I'm sorry, your messy desk. Yeah.
So this is kind of what it looks like, and it's very, you got the stance, you can adjust it. It's not plugged in. This one's got a touch screen interface, and very simple though. And actually the Pro series has four wavelengths. So we've got 630, 660, 830, and 850. So 630 nanometers and 660 nanometer red, and then 830 nanometer and 850 nanometer near infrared. It's kind of a funny story. I can tell it very quickly. You know, when we started this, I mean, this industry is still very much in its infancy, in my opinion. And you know, and everybody was using 660 nanometer red and 850 nanometer near infrared. And but then I was we have this awesome database on our site. You would love it because you love the science. It's got about 8,000 studies in it now, of all of just every study that in the history of mankind on photobiomodulation is in this database. And you can filter it and sort it by what were they studying? The brain, were they studying skin, were they studying bone, whatever. And then the wavelengths they used, and was it, you know, positive and negative or neutral effect. And when I actually looked into that database and I actually looked at the wavelengths that had been studied, I was curious to me that 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer were not the most studied wavelengths, actually. It turns out
Really?
that 830 nanometers and 630 nanometers have been studied a lot more. You see a lot of studies on 810. And I was like, well, why is that? Then I came across a paper by Tina Carew, a Russian scientist, and he identified the peak action spectra for cytochrome C. And it's not 660 and 850, believe it or not. It's so and he The paper, I believe it was 620, 670, 760, which is a strange one, and 830. And so I said, well, if the peak action spectra of cytochrome C is those wavelengths, like why wouldn't we want to use those wavelengths if that's the primary mechanism? And so that was really the genesis for the MitoPro. I mean, we still kept 660 and 850, but we added in 630 and 830, with the idea being that maybe we can hit the peak action spectra of cytochrome C a little bit better. And so then that was like 5 years ago, I think. So and so those four wavelengths are still in that device today. But now we've part of the evolution of the business is that we've added new wavelengths and really kind of
Nice.
put them out into the wilderness and try to get feedback from people about, you know, what's working for them. 810 is an interesting one because there are studies in cadavers showing that it penetrates the skull the best. So, you know, that for the brain. 810 seems to be a good wavelength to use, and we have a helmet that we designed which uses 810, which is, you know, it's called the MitoMind. You know, it's designed for brain health, and so that's really the fun part is, you know, staying on top of the research. Another an interesting factoid for you is when I started this company, that database that I referenced, there were 4,500 studies, and now there's almost 8,000, only in 6 years. So
Wow.
the pace of research, right? Because there are 8 billion people on the planet, and this topic is gaining a lot of momentum, I think, in all facets. Either just the average Joe is becoming aware of it, but obviously this the researchers are becoming more and more aware of it. So there's a lot more interest in it to study it. And so that's pretty amazing that it's almost doubled just in the time since that we've been in business, you know, the amount of research.
Wow, that's amazing. So for those who are listening, what he's talking about is there's the 600 wavelengths, which are red light, and you can see that it's red. But the infrared light is something over 700, right? And that's going to
Yes.
be invisible. You're not going to see that. So, and there's different frequencies, obviously, a million different frequencies probably, and some of them are going to actually have more medicinal effects. And what the Mito Red Light company, what you did was you said, because most of, like the one I'm using right is just the six the what is the 660 and the 850. That was the one that everybody was selling forever.
Yep.
That's what I have. And what you're finding out is the science is showing that we need actually multiple frequencies coming out of this light box. And you're actually delivering them all at the same time, right? You don't have a little button that says I have different frequencies, right? Is this coming all at the same time, or how does that work?
Yeah, so in the Pro, we just have an even distribution. So it's checkerboard style, a 660 LED, and then a 630 next to it, and then below that, an 830 and an 850. Yeah, so what I've come to believe, and what I believe is true, is that the reason why 660 and 850 were originally used is because it was a supply chain issue. Like they were just easily found. I think 660 was used in grow lights. Grow lights have been around for a couple decades, and 850 is used in the security camera industry, so infrared. And so it was more just an availability thing. And so they're like, so somebody, you know, 10 years ago was like, hey, I want to build a light device. Where do I get red and infrared? And those were what were available. But now the LED tech has come so far that I can, you tell me the wavelength and I can get it. And so 810, you know, 830, 633. I mean, you know, we use 630, but if I wanted 633, I could get 633. And, you know, so it's just, and so it's been amazing to watch. Now, some of those non-traditional wavelengths are, or the LEDs are a little bit more expensive. But from what my standpoint is I want the best possible product. And so, and if I think that that makes the product better, then I don't mind absorbing a little bit more cost.
So I know you have the MitoPro Plus and you have the MitoPro X. And then you have the MitoAdapt. And the MitoPro X has 6 wavelengths, and the MitoAdapt has 11 wavelengths. How many wavelengths are in the MitoPro Plus, which is the entry level one for like 369 for the 300? How many in there?
4. So that's 4. So originally, when we had the MitoRed original, which has 2 wavelengths, 660, 850. So we started same as everybody else. And then I read the paper by Tina Carew, and I said, why don't we try to target cytochrome C better? So we added 630 and 830 to the MitoPro Plus. And then, you know, we come find more research, and we're like, well, why don't we add 810? And so then we add 810 to the Adapt, you know, that's kind of, and the Adapt is interesting because it has we have a patent pending on it because it has 11 different wavelength combinations. So there's really nothing like that exists. So if you want to make half of that panel 810, you can. If you want to make half of it 630, you can, or half of it 660, you can. So there's a lot of, so that type of adaptability, which is kind of why we named it that, doesn't really exist in any other panel. It was actually kind of an interesting problem to solve in terms of how to orient. There's 2 chips under every lens, and they're all individual circuits, which kind of allows you to have those 11 modes. And really what we were trying to do, I came out with that like 3.5 years ago, was I was trying to give, I was thinking to myself, how do I have the most flexible product that I can give to people, and then try to collect feedback on what wavelengths are working for what, you know, even if it's just subjective and anecdotal, at least it's some data gathering, you know, and say, so we designed an app, and you can use an app with it. And so I know, John, like, John, you used your app, and you used your Adapt, you used mode 3. And then the next day I'm going to ask you how'd you sleep, or how's your energy level today? And so now I'm trying to gather data systematically about like what modes you're using, and subjectively, you know, what you notice. And, you know, it's ongoing, but really, because really what we want to be able to do ultimately is give people more prescriptive guidance, you know, like, hey, here's what you're trying to use it for. Here's our suggested wavelength based on our, you know, the customer data we've gathered. That's kind of the direction we're trying to go in.
Oh my God, that's amazing. So listen, everybody, you're probably getting a little confusing at this point, but the idea here is that you go to mitoredlight.com and look at all the different products he has. He has ones you can wrap around your body, you can lie on them, he has the panels. It's really amazing. And if you just, you know, that entry level one, the panel, the MitoPro Pro Plus, has got 4 wavelengths. That's just $369, and it's super potent. So you're going to get a therapeutic dose, and all you need is for 10 minutes, right, to get a therapeutic dose.
That's all we recommend: 8 to 12 minutes, 4 to 6 times a week.
Yeah. So a lot of the lights that you get aren't strong enough to actually deliver any therapeutic benefit. And as we're hearing, the ones that have more multiple wavelengths are going to give you obviously more bang for your buck, and they're going to do different things to support different. And we're going to get into what different studies have been done for different, like inflammation and even weight loss and your joint health and muscle recovery and so many things that these things do. So go to mitoredlight.com, check out what he's got, and you can use the code LifeSpa for a discount code, and you'll get a discount for any lights you buy from Scott here at Mito Red Light Therapy, mitoredlight.com. So check out that, and the code is LifeSpa. All right, so let's talk about one of the studies I saw you had on weight loss. Everybody's talking about GLP-1 agonist, and everyone wants to lose weight. So how does red light make you lose weight? That doesn't even, you know, for most people, like, come on, really?
Yeah. So, well, first off, one of the things that I say is that, well, the studies that have been done, that are pretty good studies, like well designed and controlled, they do it, you know, as so one of them that comes to mind is they used an infrared light pad on the trouble areas, you know, I think it was like the love handles type area. But the control group was diet and exercise, and then the intervention group was diet, exercise, and the infrared pad. And what they did notice was actually, you know, more weight loss in the intervention group. So it seemed to augment the benefits of diet and exercise for weight loss. Now, I don't believe as a standalone that it would do much for weight loss. I think you need to exercise and diet in addition to that. And interesting of that study too, they noticed improvements in insulin sensitivity. You know, it's just interesting. You know, like, so like, but in statistically significant versus the control group even. So it wasn't, you know, so there's something else going on there.
I think that might be because of the fact that that visceral fat that we carry is metabolically active. You know, that's almost its own kind of blood sugar regulating, energy regulating organ. So it kind of does make sense that if you can activate more mitochondrial energy, help detoxify that energy production quicker and faster, that it might actually translate into better facilitating, or maybe less dumping of that fat into your tissue. I'm not sure how it works, but I'd love to dig into that study. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. It was a cool study. I think that was about 2018, 2019. I remember reading it, the one I'm thinking of. And then, you know, there are some devices. Now, our devices, we sell a belt. We haven't done any clinical studies specifically on the belt, but there are a couple of devices that are cleared for fat, you know, for use in fat loss that use red and near infrared light, 630, 660 nanometers. And if you read through those papers, like the way that they describe what they think is happening is that that the fat cells are becoming porous, and that actually some of the lipids are leaking out into the bloodstream, which again would, if that's the case, that would also suggest that you need to be exercising, because, you know, if it just leaks out in the bloodstream and it just gets deposited somewhere else, like that's not going to help you. But if you're able to use that energy when it's more easily available, then that would make sense. And so generally what I've suggested to people, if they were going to use it for weight loss, like, or how I would do it, let's say, because I'm not a doctor and I don't give medical advice, but how I were going to do it is I would probably do it fasted. And I would probably use, my wife would do in the morning fasted. She would wear the belt and then walk on the treadmill. Or the idea would be use the light and then exercise immediately after would be my suggestion.
Right. Sounds great. The other big thing that red light maybe is most known for is sort of the inflammation. Like, everybody's talking about inflammation now. How does red light therapy affect inflammation? What's the mechanism of that? How good does it work? What's the story?
Yeah, so I think it comes back to the ATP production, or really the inflammation that it's triggering your body to upregulate its own anti-inflammatory and antioxidant pathways, right? So it's really your own body just turning down the fire, you know. And really, I think at the end of the day, just like that, to the extent that we can harness ancient wisdom and just get out of our own way and support our body in doing what it knows how to do, this incredible vessel that our souls travel in, that has just been designed by God or evolution, whatever your belief system is, it's incredible either way. And it just knows what to do, and we just have to support it to the extent that you're giving it these beneficial wavelengths of light, and it's upregulating ATP production, and you have this retrograde signaling to the nucleus to upregulate these anti-inflammatory signaling and pathways, and then it just knows what to do. But I think the problem is, like with inflammation, and like the problem with inflammation is that not even that inflammation is a problem. It's that chronic. It's that it's chronic, in that people that have very bad lifestyle habits, and so we need to kind of intervene, and this is a potential way to do that.
You can see how a lack of exposure to the sun, you know, and how easy it would be for us to get, you know, even if we go outside today compared to our ancestors, they had, you know, minimal clothing on. We're always dressed. It just makes it even more difficult, hats on and everything. Even though the infrared will penetrate much of that, it's still creating a barrier for it to penetrate, you know. And then what's also interesting about Ayurvedic medicine, ancient medical wisdom, is they always would say that the limiting factor for our health is how well we can take out the trash. I'm not talking about poop, it's cellular trash. And we know that the mitochondria make energy it's nuclear energy, really. And the waste products of like a nuclear site is like a big issue. Well, the waste products of our energy production is the major reason why we age, because we lose the ability to take out the trash. And what you're actually saying is that what this infrared light is doing, if we keep it up, is it actually keeps supporting our ability to make more of that melatonin, which is weird that melatonin is the one that's taking out the trash. But if you lose the ability to make that because your skin breaks down, you're not getting the sun to make that melatonin that swabs up all that free radical damage from energy production, you're going to pay an age-related price, a degenerative price, an inflammatory price, basically. Is that's pretty much in line with, I mean, they didn't know you're supposed to stay outside. They just stayed outside because that's all there was, right? They only had little huts. It wasn't like you could be inside, you know?
Yes. And, but I would say, again, because just to kind of really kind of drive down on that point, there is a concern with, let's say, for sun exposure, because I would say, generally speaking, people need to get out in the sun more than they are. And I don't think anybody really can disagree with that. Having said that, excess UV light can cause premature photoaging of the skin. And so again, getting back to this idea of being outside when your shadow is longer than you, I think is a great idea. I do think 10 to 15 minutes of midday sun on as much skin as possible is also a good idea, because UVB light and vitamin D are important. And then another hack or suggestion I can give is to, even if you are outside midday, if you don't want the UV light exposure, sit in a shaded area in a green space, because green reflects infrared. And so I've actually measured this with a meter. It's actually pretty cool. So you can take an infrared meter and point it up to the sun, and you measure, 40 milliwatts per centimeter squared, whatever it is. And then I sit in the shade on my porch, and I point it down toward my green grass, and I measure 8 to 10 milliwatts coming up off of the grass. It's pretty cool, right? And so, and then I do think that this is kind of why I have my green wall here. I think that there's something to the why we're drawn to these green areas. And I think it's because they are reflecting all of this infrared light back into our bodies. So again, you can have your cake and eat it too, in the sense that you can be outside even midday. If you don't want the photo aging from the UV on your skin, sit in the shade, but in a green space, and you'll still get infrared.
Yeah, let's nerd out on that a little bit, because that is such a cool thing. If everybody would go and Google infrared light camera, and actually a picture of a city, and actually just type in city infrared light, and you'll look at a brick building, it'll look exactly like a brick building. I mean, it'll look exactly like it does, with a regular camera almost, just a little blurred out. Or then you look up, like you said, a green space, a forest, and infrared light, and it's exploding with white light. Like it's just exploding. And you can just see that all that infrared is bouncing off the leaves, off the ground. And so when you go for a walk in the forest, I mean, the whole, forest bathing, natural therapy kind of thing, part of it is the microbes in there are different, but the other part of it is you're getting literally bombarded. And like you said, I didn't realize it was coming off the ground. I thought it was just bouncing off the leaves, but it's just getting you in every possible direction. It's just blasting you with infrared light. And let's talk about the penetration of that infrared light and how it can warm you. Isn't that how the cows can be out there in the freezing cold, because they're getting bathed in infrared light, and that's penetrating them and sort of warming them from the inside out? Is that accurate?
It is. Yeah. Well, we should probably, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that's special, quote unquote special, about the wavelengths of light that we use is that they are actually non-thermal. There's very minimal water absorption. So this comes up a lot, like how is this different from infrared sauna? And so 600 nanometer to 700 nanometer red, and 700 to roughly 1,000 nanometer near infrared, there's very little water absorption. And you can look this up on Wikipedia, the near infrared window of biological tissue, and it shows the water absorption graph. Once you get above 1,000 nanometers, that's still near infrared, but 1,500 nanometers is mid, and then you have far infrared. Once you get to 1,000, you see the water absorption takes off, and it's on a log scale too, so it's much, much different, and that's where you get the warming, right? And so that's why an infrared sauna uses typically far infrared, these really, really long wavelengths with high water absorption. Literally, cook your body from the inside out. That wavelengths go deep into the body, absorbed by water, and they generate heat. But what's interesting about what's important to understand about our lights is that we don't want the heat. We don't want the water absorption because we want that light to go deep into the tissues. And that's why that light's able to penetrate, because it's not getting absorbed by water or other chromophores in the body like melanin or hemoglobin. So there is a special window, and it's called the optical window, and I refer to it as the optimal part of the optical window, 600 to 900 nanometers, where the wavelengths are long enough to penetrate, but there's no water absorption, so they can really get deep into the tissues and actually act on the mitochondria.
So you're getting the same penetration with the near infrared light as you're getting with the far infrared light, but the far infrared light, you're getting that heat, that water absorption, and that activation of that might actually affect melanin and things like that. So that the question then is, like, what's your take on, you know, infrared versus conventional saunas?
So I hesitate to, I think sauna generally is good. I mean, actually, not to go too far in the rabbit hole, but most of the finished data is from Finnan, and it is kind of traditional sauna. So that's why I do feel like some of that stuff's been hijacked by kind of the infrared sauna salespeople, to be honest. Now, having said that, I do think that there's benefit to, and certainly it can be relaxing, and there is benefit to heating the body and raising the heart rate, you know, especially if, you know, exercise, is it something you could do if you're injured or whatever? So, you know, I there's use cases for it, but it is, as far as it's important to understand that it's very different than what's in our lights, because people get confused because it's infrared. But what we use is a very specific part of the infrared, the very beginnings of near infrared, where there isn't that water absorption and there isn't that heat creation. And that's very purposeful because we want those wavelengths to penetrate deep and act on the mitochondria. Now, are there benefits to sauna? You know, that's another, and traditional versus infrared. You know, again, those arguments can be had by sauna experts. But you know, I would say that there's a place for both. And certainly sauna is not a substitute for red and infrared light as it's found in a device like ours.
Right, right, exactly. Because these you can use every day. And the science on these frequencies is really, like you said, there are like 8,000 studies on them. So again, it's mitoredlight.com. Go there, check out all the different red lights and the different frequencies on each one. Use the code LifeSpa for a discount. And I want to talk about one more thing before I let you go. And thank you so much. This has been so cool to just learn, you know, and dive into the details about this. But it's your skin. We know, you know, I've seen studies showing that that red light will actually, infrared light will build collagen. Everybody's worried about their skin. Yeah. Tell us more about that. Some of the studies on skin health. Everybody's, you know, worried about skin getting thinner and again getting more frail and wrinkly and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's actually very well studied for skin. I mean, skin and hair, and actually it was originally, so the red light
too, huh?
Oh yes. So actually, so it was originally discovered by a Hungarian scientist who was he was using a red laser. He was studying skin cancer in mice, so he shaved the poor mice and he implanted tumors into them, and then he ablated the tumors with a red laser. The laser had just been invented. He wanted, and it was a low power laser, so it didn't do anything to the cancer, but he noticed that the wounds healed faster and their hair grew back faster, the group of mice that got the laser. So that's actually the origin. And for decades, they thought it was only laser, but then they realized that you could get the same effects with LEDs, which are much safer. So right. hence where we are today. But so wound healing, so hair growth, that's like the origin story of red light, but then it's also been very well studied for skin health. I mean, increasing collagen production, elastin. We have, there are masks all over the market, which, you know, again, they're okay. You know, most of them, we have a mask too, although ours is designed specifically for acne and uses blue light too, because there's really, really good data on 415 nanometer blue light for killing the bacteria, which causes acne. And so our mask uses 415 nanometer blue. The idea is, you know, instead of using benzoyl peroxide or these other kind of harsh things to kill the bacteria, you just use, you know, 5 minutes of blue light, and then you use the red to lower inflammation, because acne is essentially caused by the bacteria and the inflammatory response to the bacteria and the excess sebum production. Unfortunately, I know a lot about acne because I had it really bad when I was a teenager, and they didn't have masks like this around, unfortunately, when I was a teenager. But we have them now, and they work. The before and afters are amazing. You should see some of the before and afters. The one Wow. girl for 10, she used it for 10 days, and night and day difference. I was totally shocked. So again, the very well studied for skin. And then even some of these other wavelengths, depending on what the skin issue is, you know, like we use 590 nanometer yellow in one of our panels because it's been shown to increase nitric oxide. So very exciting in the stance that like we're still in the early stages of this in terms of like the actual application of all the research. And, you know, and really I'm excited for like what the next few decades are going to hold in terms of how we get yeah. better and better at utilizing specific wavelengths for specific things and just get better and better. Cause the LED tech has come so far, like I was saying, like we can use any wavelength we want. We can create any combination of wavelengths we want. So now it's like, okay, so anyways, it gets my mind spinning about like different product design opportunities as we go forward.
Yeah, it is already a little overwhelming already. And I wonder, you know, based on when people go to your site, and they look at all these lights, is there kind of one that you'd recommend for the kind of the starter person, the starter light? Here's the best one, best bang for your bucks, and to get you the benefits that you need. And like I said, you know, when I first started, I bought a little light bulb on Amazon, and then I bought a little bigger light bulb on Amazon, and then and I realized that those little ones, I mean, they're fine and they're not going to hurt you, and they have the right frequencies, sort of the original frequencies, but they're not powerful enough to really make a dent and to really make a difference therapeutically. So you have to stay under them for a really long time and have it real close, all that kind of stuff. What one would you recommend to kind of for people to look at first as they go onto your site?
Well, I would say the Mito Pro Plus, like we talked about. And I would say, if you're gonna invest in one thing, if you're new and maybe you're skeptical or you know you're budget conscious, just get a panel. Because I love the panels because, again, they're powerful. You get a really good therapeutic amount of light, and they're super durable. So it's an investment. You know, you might spend $300-$400 for a tabletop panel, but if it's properly cared for, it should last many, many years. I mean, the LEDs, one of the great things about LED tech is they last forever. And ours are built, and we've got very sophisticated heat sinks and active cooling. So to the extent that there is heat generated when we run current over that LED chip, we're actively cooling it. So they last a really, really long time. And we're focusing the light at you. So you're getting a therapeutic amount of light. So I would say get a panel, a well-built panel, and the biggest one within your budget would generally, because I'm a big fan of shining, not just doing the face for aesthetic reasons, but shining the light on as much surface area of the body as possible. So we get these, you know, general health and wellness benefits, whether it's melatonin or, you know, supporting healthy inflammation, those types of things. So the more light, the better, and the more surface area, the better. But, you know, and a panel is really good for that because, again, it's super durable and versatile.
And you think it's just with your panels, because they're strong enough, just 10 minutes four times a week is enough? Is that or every day, or what would you say?
So I personally use devices 5 to 6 times a week. I like the idea of taking a day off. There's some research that I've seen where it suggests that some of the benefits last longer than 24 hours, right? And you are looking for kind of a Goldilocks dose too. So one of the reasons why I suggest occasionally taking a day off is I was thinking about like, could you, if you think about it, it's like a benefit on a curve, and if it lasts more than 24 hours and you use the light again, now your baseline is shifting upwards every time you use it, and you might eventually hit an inhibitory zone, if that makes sense. And right. So just take a day off and just get back to baseline and then kind of start over again was my thought process for that.
So more is not necessarily better. For 10 minutes, you're getting a dose that you would get by sort of being out there from 6 in the morning till noon. That's the dose that you need and be done. Don't sit under, because the more you could reach the point where the body says, hey, stop, enough is enough, and kind of creates an inhibitory reaction to that.
Exactly. I think people are so deficient that it's probably going to be hard to get there. But it is theoretically possible. And, you know, I think of it like exercise, you know, like 99.99% of people can benefit from going out for a walk every single day. But you know, that doesn't mean that everybody should go run a marathon every day, right? And so it is a stressor, and so we want to kind of dose it correctly.
All right, good. Scott, this has been amazing. Is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you need to talk about so people know, get the whole understanding of, what you're doing and what red light can do for us?
Well, if certainly, if they have questions, we have a lot of really good articles that we've compiled over the past 6 years on our blog. So, mitoredlight.com. You can go to the learn section. I know that some of this can be confusing, and I throw around these wavelengths. You know, I talk. I mean, I live and breathe this stuff, so sometimes I talk over people's heads. You know, that they don't, and so and maybe I go kind of fast. But I think kind of the bottom line is that the vast majority of people can benefit by just supplementing a little bit of red and near infrared light into their lives, and we're here to kind of give you options in safe ways to do that. So, and certainly if you have any other questions, you can call us Monday to Friday. We have a live phone support here in Arizona, or send us an email at info@mitoredlight.com. We're happy to walk you through any questions you have.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Scott. Remember the discount is Life Spa, and you get a, I think it's a 5% discount on any light that you buy from Scott at mitoredlight.com. Thank you so much. And as this grows, I'd love to have you back at some point and talk about the newest and latest frequencies that are coming out and what they do. It's an evolving science. It's amazing. Thank you.
Awesome, man. I love it. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute and tell you what we do here at lifespa.com. I've been in practice now for 40 years, 38 of them I've been practicing Ayurvedic medicine full time. For the last 20 years, I've been writing articles and doing videos on the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with the modern science. If something's been around for 1,000 years, still practiced today, and you have modern science to prove it, boy, I really feel like that's something we should all be taking a look at. And that's what we do at lifespa.com, and all that information is for free. So just go to lifespa.com and search in your health topic, and you'll get the information, the article that you need, hopefully that will help you. While you're there, check out our Ayurvedic store. You can get there through lifespa.com or go to store.lifespa.com. And there we have all of our organic Ayurvedic herbs, organic skincare line, more books, tapes, knowledge that we give you is all there at our store. All of our cleansing kits are there in our store. All of our herbs are whole herbs with the natural occurring microbiome, the way it came out of the soil. And that's critically important because if I took the bugs out of you'd be completely different. We take the bugs away from a plant, like sterilizing and making an extract or spraying your food with pesticides, you lose significant benefit of that plant. And that's why we use the whole plant with the natural occurring microbiome. So check us out, learn more about what we're doing here at lifespa.com, and we'll see you again.
This recording is brought to you by LifeSpa, where ancient Ayurvedic wisdom meets modern science. Get access to free health video newsletters by Dr. John at lifespa.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.